Hey folks, this is Simon Ward. Welcome to the High Performance Human Podcast. It's time for another episode where we are devoted to helping you achieve optimal human performance. Please check out my website, simonwardtriathloncoach.com, for all my latest blogs and send your questions to beth@thetriathloncoach.com. If you're not already a subscriber to the show, please go to simonward.podbean.com, where you can subscribe and make sure you don't miss any of our weekly episodes. Hey listeners, well, welcome back. I am delighted today to have a couple of guys that you've probably not heard of before, but I'm sure you're going to hear a lot more of them in the future. So they're from the other side of the pond, but slightly further north from where some of our recent guests have been coming from. So they are from Canada, and I'd like to welcome to the show Taylor Reed and Jackson Laundrie. So welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, good to be here.
So the reason we've got Taylor and Jackson on is because if you're in the triathlon world but you've been living under a rock recently, you might have failed to notice that the PTO and Challenge have got this really big event coming up at the beginning of December. It's called Challenge Daytona. There's 100 of the world's top athletes, including some of the ITU athletes who've been given wild cards to race there. From the UK, we've got our own Brownlee brothers are racing. Georgia Taylor Brown is racing, Lucy Hall, and then we've got some of the other big names. And we've also got a lot of guys that you could call them the supporting cast if you like. I think that might be a bit rude because, as you'll hear in a moment when I read out their resume, these guys are not supporting actors in the play at all. Isn't that right, guys?
No, that's not the plan, goal. At least. Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll be going for top 20s. There's no comment about that. Like, yeah. Won't be easy, but I don't think we've got any other goals other than cracking the top 20 and giving a top 10 a shot. Yeah, otherwise there's no point in racing.
No, well, you know, you've got to get out there, haven't you? I sometimes wonder for you guys if it's a bit like the Tour de France where you've got to get in a break and get on the front so the cameras are on you and you give your sponsors a little bit of exposure.
That would help. Yeah, we don't quite have that speed maybe on the swim to get there with Louis and Schumann and a couple of those guys. So we'll see. Might have to make it up on the bike if we want to get to the front.
Okay. Well, let me tell you a little bit about Taylor and Jackson then before we get going. So Jackson is a 70.3 champ. He won Ironman Raleigh 70.3 in 2018. He won a local race for him, I guess, Mont-Tremblant 70.3 in 2019. He's also been on the 70.3 podium 11 times. So he's used to standing on one of the top three steps. He is the winner and co-organizer of the 2020 Canadian Pro Tri Championships, which I think, Jackson, that was supported by PTO, wasn't it? And they put up some of the prize money?
Yeah, that's actually Taylor and I were the ones who organized that race. And it was actually the first race that the PTO, you know, decided to put the prize purse up for, because we called them and we're like, hey, we're trying to organize this race. And they really wanted to support us because we were actually organizing the event and creating something for the pros. So they kind of like did that for us. And then they thought, hang on, we could probably do this for other races as well. So then they did, you know, a couple in the States and they had a couple over in Britain there. So it really took off, but yeah, that was huge for them to step in. And for us to be race organizers was a little bit of a different aspect of the sport than we're used to, but yeah, it was worth it.
Oh, well, we'll come back.
I don't think we were expecting that. Yeah. Like until, like right on the dot, we were a little ambitious and did it in about 4 to 6 weeks. So that was a bit of a shocker, and definitely the PTO brought it from it probably would have been a provincial race without them, and they made it essentially a national race, which was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll chat about that in a minute then. The differences between being in the field and organizing the field. I was involved in one of the races in the UK. They supported with, I think, 15,000 prize money, which was Outlaw X. So I do some of the commentary on that race. And there was a race a couple of weekends before called the Helvellyn race, which Alistair won. And then he donated the prize money back. I think 7.5 went back to the prize purse for the athletes, and 7.5 went to the Brownlee Foundation that him and Jonathan run. So yeah. And I think they've done some other races, haven't they, in Europe? They did have one in Switzerland that was supposed to be the first race in Europe, but then just after they got on the bike, the rains came and just wiped out the whole event, I think. Yeah,
that was the very first event. Yeah, that was tough to see.
Yeah, well, let's come back to that in a bit then about how PTO have been supporting events. Let's just get back to some of your bio here then, Jackson. So you co-host the Real Triathlon podcast. So I'm interested now. We'll come back to that later and talk a little bit about what you do and maybe give our listeners some links so they can check that out. So you were fourth in the 2020 Zwift Pro Tri Series, so another innovation this year. You won one stage of the Super League E Series, so another virtual racing program, and you placed second at the Ironman VR14. And you're coached by James Loring of Team LPC. So you've been there for 8 years. So that's good to see. Loyal to your coach. Taylor, let's tell everybody a little bit about you then, Taylor. So 5 professional half distance victories, 3 at 70.3. So which ones were those that you've won, Taylor?
It would have been Silverman was the first one, and then Victoria, 70.3, and then Puerto Rico. So... yeah, it was funny. I actually won the last installment of Silverman, so that's in Vegas, and then the last installment as a pro in Puerto Rico, and then Victoria's done too. Yeah.
So you stop basically
races,
you
because they cancel them.
Yeah.
Exactly. I can't defend.
So you're the common denominator in those races being shut down after racing, then, Taylor.
I know what's going on.
So Silverman, that was on the same course. Did they not run? Did they not run a world championships there 1 year?
Yeah. Yeah, that was where 70.3 World Champs was. It was pretty close to the same course, except I think they swam in a different location. We swam in like the big dammed lake there. I think they actually swam in a small sort of pond almost, if I remember.
Were they not at Henderson there, I think?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and it was quite a hilly course, wasn't it, I thought? It's not a flat course around there.
That was where I got the big advantage. I was a smaller guy against a lot of the bigger guys. And then the run was really hilly too. So I made up a lot of ground, which is good.
Okay. Well, you've got to play to your strengths. So that's what we always tell the athletes is choose races where it's going to suit your strong cards. So you've been on the podium 15 times then. So you're no stranger to coming in the top.
I'm tied with Jack for 11 70.3 podiums. So we're pretty much tied. It's pretty awesome.
So if you're not really a swimmer, you must work your way through the field, and then it must be a bit frustrating for you to run out of real estate just before you catch the guy who's in first.
Yeah. that's happened many a time.
Yeah. Okay, so let's tell everyone, apart from that then, you started chasing Olympic dreams, so you were racing some of the under 23 ITU races. You were Canadian champion in 2013. Second place in the Canadian elite race that year. You were getting strong events. You decided to turn your hand to 70.3, which obviously hasn't been a disappointment for you.
Hasn't been too bad.
No. I'm interested in this next bit. You're a spokesperson for dyslexia.
Yeah. So I'm dyslexic myself. And essentially, I've just found that I've been able to build a really good career in sport. And I think that there was a really interesting connection between dyslexia giving me, the ability to actually become a better athlete, and then also being an athlete helping me overcome dyslexia. So I think the biggest, connection was just delayed gratification. So I knew that I had to wait a little bit longer. I had to work a little bit harder in school. So I also learned that I had to work a little bit harder in sports. And I was willing to wait a few years before I started winning, which is really helpful when it is an endurance sport, when really your best years sometimes can be in your early 30s. So that was pretty neat.
I've, come across a lot of athletes and successful business people that were dyslexic and maybe struggled at school and were picked upon and, unfairly by the teachers because they were felt to be slow learners, and by other kids because they were sort of, because they were slow learners, they were a bit stupid. And so the kids sort of, is that something you faced when you were at school?
A little bit not so much for the bullying, because I did find sport early enough. So it was a little bit tough in grade school. But once I got into high school, I basically gravitated towards cross-country running, and that gave me something to identify with, and I was good at it. So it sort of gave me the ability to build sort of this persona around sport. But definitely, like, just in the classroom, it was pretty tough because you had to, like, learn a little bit differently. I did go to university, so it was pretty funny because, like, my buddy starts his essay, like, 2 days before the assignment's due. And I'm like, I have to start it, like, the day I get it so that I can actually finish it in time. So there's all, like, the little things that you sort of, like, are like, oh, okay, like, darn, I don't get to maybe go to as many parties as my buddies because I actually have to do the work. But, yeah, like, it was tough in some ways, but in other ways, I'm really happy, like, that I learned from it and actually get to share the story a little bit between people. And I know, like, there's a few other triathletes out there who are also dyslexic, so it's pretty cool to see how, like, it is a community that can build, yeah.
And how do you use your sporting success then to help other people with dyslexia? Do you do talks and presentations in school?
I haven't done talks yet. Like, that's sort of the plan. Obviously, this year wasn't really a big talking year for schools. But yeah, like, I definitely try and reach out to a couple of our, like, communities. Like, there's Dyslexia Canada and then Dyslexia Ontario. So I sort of, like, reach out and see if I can do anything for them. And then just be there for people, like, who have kids who might have difficulty in learning. So I've connected with iDyslexia, which is just, like, sort of platform where people with dyslexia can chat. So I've chatted to some parents, and just it's pretty neat to see, like, show the kids that you're not alone and you can actually do cool things and become, like, successful. Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, good for you doing that. And, you know, hopefully that your success will enable you to use that platform to go into schools once that becomes more accessible. And we'll make a link to that for you in the show, you know, the dyslexic associations and everything, because I guess there may be dyslexic people in Canada listening, and I guess in the UK as well, so we do the Canadian and the UK one. All right, so Jackson, professional triathlete, you need to train, you need to, you know, being successful is all about having consistent training, but this year has not been helpful for consistent training, has it? Certainly not in the UK. What was it like being based in Canada once COVID took hold and things started getting shut down?
Yeah, it was, well, for us, it was interesting because Taylor and I had both done a race in Mexico on March, like, 15th or something. So it was right when everything was shutting down everywhere.
Well, we got back the day everything, like, went crazy. Well, like, we were in the airport. Yeah.
No, it was already gone crazy when we left. It was just Mexico. Yeah. So they just let the race happen anyways.
They let it happen a little further.
So I actually had a pretty good race there and finished second at 70.3 Campeche. And then we got back and it was just like complete shutdown, 2 weeks. You can't leave your house. And it was really strict. Like, nobody was, you know, nobody was kind of cheating that system. And then after that, it was like, okay, we don't have any idea what's going on with racing. So, like, let's try to train. You can bike and run. And that was fine. We never got shut down from biking or running in our area. Just, like, some people were at some points, people, like, there was a bit of debate going on of whether you should or not, but really the hospitals here were all pretty, like, empty. It was okay. Cause we're not in, like, a really big city. There weren't a lot of cases in Guelph where we live. So that was nice that we could train. But the swim was like, there was nothing because it was March. So you can't swim in Canada in March in open water. So like, I actually got in the open water in April in some places, and I tried.
You were crazy.
I set up some bands and got the, like, resistance bands and put a bench, so I was kind of in a swimming position and just doing that. And I just found a way to get in the water, open water, freezing cold water, like, a couple times a week. And then eventually, once it opened up, Taylor and I pretty much swam 5-6 days a week open water in the summer, and that kind
of the most open water I've ever done. I think we've never done that much open water in our lives.
So do you guys live quite close together then, so you can train together?
We're about 2 kilometers away.
So and how long have you been training partners then?
Like a couple years, like we kind of like off and on a bit because we have different coaches. So sometimes it'll line up well and sometimes it won't because he'll race and I won't or something. Yeah. So, but right now,
this year's been really good.
Yeah, this year we've been really linked up a lot. Well, nobody's been racing much. So we've been training mostly. And then also the races we did do, we've both done.
I don't think this entire year, none of us will have raced except for virtually. like every single race that one of us did, we both were there. Like
except we had some luck. The one draft.
Oh yes, yeah. I did one more than you did. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, it's been good this year to get into a good training rhythm, and Cody Beals as well. We've trained with him a lot. So it's been interesting, but we've learned to like love training, because if you don't, then this year you're just going to do nothing.
Okay. So it was interesting during the Tour de France, listening to some of the pro riders talking about what they'd been doing during the lockdown. Cause obviously some of them, you know, the situation with them all over the world was different. I was listening to Wout van Aert talking about how he'd done lots of trail riding this year. I mean, he's a world cyclocross champion, multiple winner there, but so he clearly likes doing the off-road stuff, but he'd been out doing 6 or 7 hour gravel rides and building up his endurance that way.
I started doing like mountain bike rides. Like I hadn't touched my mountain bike in years, and I just pulled out my like mountain bike from when I was probably like 15 years old. It's pretty small, but it still just fits me. And I just like shred the trails like once a week because it's fun. Yeah. And like, there's no huge pressure right now. Yeah.
Do you think that because you haven't had races this year, and obviously when you're racing and if you're traveling, the schedule's pretty tough, isn't it? Because you travel to a race, you get there, you've got to do your admin, you've got to sign on, you go and have a little recce around the course, but you're not really doing a great deal of training. Then you've got all the admin the day before, racking and everything, briefing. You go and do your race, then you might get a chance to go to the post-race party, but then you're probably flying again and packing up. You get home on the Tuesday, and then you might have a day at home to wash your kit, clean your bike, do a bit of training, and then you're off again. So your fitness actually suffers. Although you're racing a lot, your fitness suffers. Do you feel that having had a more consistent spell of training throughout the summer, you're actually in a fitter, at a higher level now with your fitness than you would have been?
You go ahead on that one, Taylor.
Yeah, like I would say there's a yes for sure, because like there best definitely haven't been years where I've trained this consistently with like these big of blocks. Like I've definitely had like 2 to 3 months where I'm just been training. But the biggest hurdle has actually been to make sure we don't overtrain. We've had to make sure, because also the thing is we didn't know when racing was going to start. So obviously we spent a lot of the time in this sort of like holding pattern of like 15 to 17 hours of training, which actually was really nice. And I think I'll take a little bit away from that less sometimes is more. Mm-hmm. But now we're going pretty hard. Like we're getting back up to that 20 to 25 hour range. And like, I did see some like massive PBs. Like I did a 5K and ran like 14:48, which was like about a 10 second PB. And then like PB'd in my power, like 20 minute power thing. So all of a sudden, like they were just finding these little goals. But actually, like, I think Jackson would have to double check with himself, but I think we both raced like 7 or 8 times this year. So it's not like we didn't have a season.
Right.
Yeah. Like we sort depends of found a way.
Yeah. Well, I suppose with virtual racing, there's no traveling, is there? So and I don't think a lot of people realize how debilitating, even though you're in a vehicle, you're going to the airport, you just moving your bags around, you're checking in, you're sitting down, then you're on the plane and you're doing the same at the other end. So you're not really doing a lot of activity, but it's actually really fatiguing traveling, even if you're in the same, even if you're in very similar time zones.
Well, and then packing that is like a whole nother day.
And it's the planes. Like it's, it's just hard to explain how and why, but you're right for sure. It does take more of a toll than you think. And then also just sitting like, you go from being active most of the day to sitting almost all day and just places tighten up that aren't used to. And, and your body definitely takes a bit to recover from that. So people underestimate that for sure. And I think that's one thing that more people need to take into account when they're planning their training or their racing schedule is try not to travel a crazy amount and just get back into training. Cause it's not going to go well sometimes.
It's something I notice with age group triathletes is because they're working and they often don't want to take too much holiday to travel and arrive at a venue. They might have a race on the Sunday, so they don't really want to arrive at a venue on the Monday, and they've got 6 days. So they try to travel quite late to the race. And I sometimes think, that might be good for you in terms of not having to take time off work, but I don't think it's as good for you in terms of your performance, because you're not really over the travel by the time you've got to get up for racing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
So either, pros I think there's too, a flip depends of the where coin. You go too. Because if you're going like some places, like we found and I found like Mexico, you don't want to go too early. Yeah. because it's just you're hot and it's just it drains you just being there. So then it's kind of that balance. You don't want to show up the day before, but you don't want to show up a week before either. It's kind of, you know, and depends on the time change too. If you're going from Europe to Mexico, to then you got to go a little early.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely coming from Europe to the US or, you know, Canada. It's definitely easier going east to west. Going the other way, west to east, is a lot harder on the body, I think, for sure.
Oh, yeah. And we never go west-east because we're – well, unless we're just going to the west coast of the
States. We'd have to go to Europe. Yeah, we'd have to go to Europe to go west.
Yeah, no, that's east.
Oh, sorry, east,
Well, you could set off and – You could set off and go via LA and Australia if you like. It's a long way around.
Yeah, it's a long
You'd definitely be tired when you got off the plane there.
Yeah.
Okay, so no races apart from the virtual ones you were doing. What was that like, racing on Zwift or doing those virtual Ironman races where you had to do your own event and then just log your times?
Yeah, so we both did that. Yeah. Taylor just did the Ironman. He didn't really do the Zwift too much. But he crushed the 3K. So what number of Ironman did you do? Was it VR10 or something?
Yeah, because what, you were like 12 or 13 or something?
I was 14.
Like 14? Yeah, so I was like, I might have been 11 or something. Yeah, but I got obliterated. I don't know. I can't race virtually. I don't know if it's like a little bit in my head or just like the equation doesn't work for me super well. I love the run. I got annihilated on the bike and then I was just like, meh. Like, it was fun. I tried really, really hard, but I was like, my whatever numbers didn't add up.
So tell us how it works then when you're on the run on the bike. So is everybody riding at the same time and you're on your own virtual trainers?
Yep. Yeah. So everyone, like, for the Ironman ones, at least you do your run for the pros. So ours was a 3K and then they would take basically your run time and your bike time and put it together to get your final time. But they basically start everyone at the same time on the bike. So everyone starts at, like, let's just say 10 a.m., the gun goes, and then it's like it's a bike race. I don't think they have any drafting, like, enabled in that kind of virtual one. And then it's basically – mine was pretty hilly. So obviously when you're going up a hill, the trainer's harder. And then when you're going down a hill, like, you go faster kind of deal. Yeah.
Oh, and when you do
– Ruby.
Yeah, Ruby. Yeah.
Okay. All the races were on Ruby, yeah?
The Ironman ones were, and then there was obviously the Zwift specific series.
So does it ever go through your head that there's somebody that might not have calibrated their trainer as well as you have and that the powers are different?
Yeah, like, I think that was partly why Ironman didn't make it, so that, like, first, second, third, and fourth got paid, like, more. They basically paid everyone equally and put in some fun premiums, because I think they understood that, like, it's impossible to make it perfect, because each trainer is like one or two lots different. Someone could have weighed themselves like at a different time. Like, you, there's too many factors. So I think they did. And obviously they took the spirit of the situation versus it being a competitive thing into a, like, let's have fun and be fit kind of idea. Yeah.
And there's two ways to go about it. They kind of decided to, like, okay, let's just, you know, trust everyone, say they put their proper weight in and calibrate the trainers, and then, you know, pay them all equally just for doing it, basically. And that's one way. Or the other way is the way Zwift does it, where they try to control it as best they can by setting rules of how you weigh in, and you have to calibrate your trainer and take videos of everything and doing their best. But at the same time, as long as you're only using one trainer and one power source, it's just, you know, some trainers and power meters just don't read the same. Like, I have my power meter and my trainer are like 4% difference from each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, for Zwift series, I have to connect my trainer, which is the lower one, which is good because that's, you know, means I'm probably not putting a higher one in, but for some people, their trainer's higher than their power meter. And then, you know, it's just the way it goes. So, but at the same time, I don't think anyone takes it too serious in terms of, like everyone tries their best and tries to win, but they don't kind of take it to mean that they're not in shape or that person's going to beat them in a race in real life, because it's just a totally different ball game.
Yeah. Were you guys in any of the races where you had to have a webcam on so that you were being beamed live onto the screen?
The Ironman ones were.
Yeah, Ironman were live, yeah.
And then also in Zwift, in the Zwift series, they asked me to be in the webcam a few times. And then there's actually another Pro Zwift series coming up starting this week. And I'm in that one as well. And that one, they're going to have everybody on the webcams.
Okay. So do they provide you with the webcams then?
You have to use your own. Well, like okay. Everyone's yeah. got a computer or a phone or find
okay.
a way to do it.
Okay.
And I think if somebody didn't have it, they would be fine.
You didn't have any disasters like Rinnie then when Tio kicked the power cable out and destroyed their race.
Not yet. Thank God. Yeah, I have a pretty good garage that's like made for training and people don't kind of, I mean, it could happen, but if Taylor ever did that to me, I think we,
I'm pretty sure you'd beat me with days. The trainer.
you guys don't set up in Jackson's garage then, do you, to race together?
Actually, we've trained together. We've never actually done a Zwift race together, but yeah, we've set up. We probably couldn't do a Zwift race together because we have to give all of the internet to like one computer. So like if
the
I
garage
come over
out there
and
is not the best internet.
Yeah, right. Oh. Okay.
You gotta be careful with it.
So let's talk about this race you organized then. How did that all come about?
Jackson, you want to talk on that? Yeah,
sure. So a very prominent coach and triathlon club owner in the area is Barry Shepley. You probably know him.
I know Barry. Yeah, he does all the he used to do all the ITU commentary, didn't he, on the TV?
Yeah, I think he's going to commentate Daytona actually.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think they're bringing
still
him down.
Really heavily involved in, you know, elite sport and a big believer in pro triathlon. And he actually started a very small series of pro races in Caledon, which is near Guelph. And so Taylor and myself and Cody did those races. Taylor did all three of them. I did two of them. Cody did two of them. And they're just a small prize purse, but it gave us something to train for and race for. Like really, it gave our training a little bit more excitement.
But
and like
it was fun too. Cause like, when's the last time we did a draft race? Like,
yeah, exactly.
We got to actually do like a crit style draft race. And then we obviously had our long course race that he gave to us as well. So that was really neat.
And they were really good races and like, you know, small races. And he kind of told us at the end of that last race that, hey, you know, if you guys want to make a pro race and get sponsors and bring, you know, make something a little more high end, like you can use these facilities that he has access to and he would help us. So we kind of took that and just made a race website and just said, hey, we're doing this and just started approaching sponsors. Taylor took the lead on like sponsorships and I kind of called the PTO and got the athletes kind of interested. And it just sort of took off when the PTO said, all right, look, we're going to give you the prize purse. I believe it was 20K Canadian prize purse that they gave us. So about 15K US. And then they also helped us out a little bit with like appearance fees. So that just took off. And then we were able to get like Brent McMahon and Rach McBride and Emily Kretz and, you know, a lot of these great athletes. And we had, so that's ITU athletes and long course athletes. So we did the Olympic distance non-drafting as well, which I believe like Outlaw X was that format as well.
Outlaw X was a half distance, but then they had to cut the swim down because it was too cold.
Oh, okay. Now standard for Britain, too cold.
Well, actually, you talked to Alistair about that. The Helle Velin one went ahead. That was pretty cold, but I think they did the full distance. But it was we had a real temperature drop at the end of September, and the water went from 16.5 degrees on the Thursday to 13 degrees on the Sunday morning.
Ooh,
we had a lot of rain, and there is a stream or a small river that flows through. So there's a lot of water change. So that was,
We had beautiful conditions because we went September, I think it was the 13th or something.
13th. Yeah.
Yeah. And we got so lucky because the week right after we held the event. So on the week we held the event, they were allowing groups of up to 100 outdoors, like total. And we had a huge amount of space. It was very, you know, safe and well spaced out. But the very next, like 4 days later, the COVID cases started going up and they cut that down to 25 total. So we wouldn't have been able to hold the race if we had it a week later. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
We got very lucky.
We got some media out. We had a ton of volunteers and photographers and we did a video production.
Which is actually up on the PTO. So we can put a link there. The whole race. Yeah, it was great. We brought in like a pro crew. So that was our biggest, sort of angle there too. Once we sort of got the race going, we really, really wanted to make sure this wasn't just a race for the pros. This was actually to try and give back to the community as well and like give people something to watch, something to be excited about. So we put basically any money that we basically made into our video production, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, we got like a lot of this money from the public. So we on the website, we had options for people to like contribute to the race, and they would get entered into a draw from our sponsors, and they could buy like a 30-minute meeting with a pro that they virtually got to do after the race. So we raised like, it was close to 10,000 from the community,
wow,
which was amazing. And that covered our whole video production and some of the other costs of the race. So yeah, we were really happy with it. It was a ton of work, and it was like crazy organizing all that in 4 or 5 weeks, but we really, you know, we were happy to do it. And then we both had a pretty good race. Like I won, I had a great race. Taylor, you know, was a close battle for third, but
7 seconds off third. Guy like ran me down.
It was cool, but it's also a really interesting course because it was such a short bike loop. It was only 1.3K. So
like everyone loved it.
Course.
And the course was really cool because you basically went up the hill for one and a half, like half of it. And then you came basically screaming down a hill, and there was this 90-degree corner at the bottom of like 65-kilometer-an-hour section that all the like people that were spectating were like chomping at the bit, like that one of us would crash. My mom, I had to look away every time I cornered.
It was scary, but we had fun, and the ITU guys did well too, so it was a pretty cool day.
How many pros did you have racing then?
10 of each, 10 men, 10 women.
Okay. Great stuff. So what were the challenges apart from finding sponsorship and trying to get it done in under 5 weeks? What were the other challenges that you came across, and did that give you a new appreciation of exactly what hard work goes into putting on a race that you're normally on the other end of?
Yeah, well, a lot of like respect for the race organizers. Like I already respected them, but now actually being in their shoes, like a huge another level. And we weren't even trying to organize like road closures or anything like that. Like we were really lucky that we got essentially a private lake and then a private essentially subdivision that we were allowed to run the race in. But yeah, like I think the biggest hurdle was actually like Jackson had to probably deal with it, was actually getting it sanctioned, since we wanted to bring the like ITU athletes on. We had to make sure that it was sanctioned by Tri Ontario, and obviously we wanted to make sure the governing bodies were happy with us. So yeah, you want to touch on that a little?
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't really that difficult. It kind of surprised me how much work it was. Like it wasn't really any more than a normal race, but you have to put together the whole race plan and the safety plan and the call plan for if somebody gets hurt, and you have to have maps and, you know, people's like on the volunteer list of who does what in an emergency. And it was really kind of an eye opener to me that like for any event to get sanctioned, you have to do that. And then, the other side being with COVID concerns, like just making sure we did have everything covered so that athletes felt safe. And, we really had to stay under that 100 people. Like that was very important.
That was a hard cutoff. I think we only got to like 98 if we wanted to be sure.
So we had to like absolutely know every single person that was going to be on the property and have volunteers at the gate, making sure nobody else came in if they weren't on the list. And that was probably in the last few days, that was the most stressful part. Cause if there was no limit, we would have been like, oh, okay, just everything's
come
done.
On over. And then I guess like there was obviously the last minute little things that you always are like a little bit wary about, but yeah, I think we had some really good help. Like obviously having Barry Shepley as sort of our like guiding factor, because he'd done this kind of stuff before. And then Craig Taylor was a huge other volunteer who actually counted our laps, because it ended up being like 31 laps on the bike. So there's no way an athlete was going to keep track.
They had to come up with a system where like the volunteers had a flipboard that showed the number of laps left. And they were also taking your time splits so that they knew they weren't missing something.
Yeah.
It was really well done. Barry put together the whole, like, you know, all the barriers and the cones and like setting up those last details. Yeah. Like he did all that, and that really was huge for us.
So let me just get this right then. So you had 98 people racing. So you had 20 pros, and then you had 88 age groupers racing. Is that right?
No. So only 20 pros raced.
Right.
Because we just wanted to make it an only pro race, just to make it simple for ourselves. We had not, like, the other people were either watching.
Got you.
We had a lot of volunteers, and there's media crew because there's a lot of photographers, videographers, and then officials. And once you take all them into account, we would have only been able to have like either 40 spectators or 40 racers. And then we decided to do spectators. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, fantastic. And is this going to be the start of a race promotion career, do you think, then? Or are you going to put it out on the back burner for a while?
I think we're going to wait at least until next year to see what we want to do.
Yeah, like, we hope to continue with the race. Yeah, we hope to continue this race and hopefully either get, you know, other people involved to help us plan it, or maybe partner with another race if they want to host our event as well. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. But for now, we're kind of like, all right, no more organizing. Let's focus on training now that we have some big races coming up. Let's be pro athletes first.
Yeah, well, you've mentioned the help you got from the PTO then. Right back at the beginning of March, the PTO had the injection of cash. I remember speaking to Sam Renouf this time last year in Hawaii, and he was just been appointed as chief operations officer. And then they've had, obviously there's Charles Adamo in there, and so that was all going on then, and then, you know, a bit of a baptism of fire for Sam, because not long after he got into the position, you're having to deal with COVID, and they had the money from Michael Moritz, and they were scrambling pretty quick, and they made that offer to provide all of the athletes on the PTO with some sort of almost like a bursary, if you like, to support them through the time when they weren't going to be racing. And obviously, for some of you guys, that's the ability to race and earn prize money is critical to you being able to carry on as professional triathletes.
It's critical for us to pay our rent.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I mean, obviously, you've got to pay your rent, you've got to eat in order to be able to train. Because if you can't do that, you're basically gonna have to get a job to do all of that.
Yeah. No, I'm sure Jackson will agree, but that was a game changer, 100%. And I think the biggest thing that affected us was actually the commitment they showed to the lower end tier pros. So, like, they very easily could have just beefed up the top end or left it the same I think it was supposed to be a $1.5 million for the whole top 100, but they added about another $1 million, but they gave it to they doubled the bottom half. And that actually probably helped, like, $2,000 more for me is not as huge, whereas for someone like in the top 10, probably not. It's obviously they're not going to say no to it, but it's not as big of a game changer. So I think Jackson would feel the same basically is probably going to put me from like hurting to being able to focus. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they weren't initially planning to maybe even pay the 50 to 100, or they were, and it was going to be 2,000, and then they made it five or four.
Yeah.
And then for the 21st to 50th, it was going to be five, and they made it eight. And for me, that was huge, because I actually, I had a pretty significant injury last year. I crashed at 70.3 Worlds, and my shoulder was like destroyed, and I had to have surgeries, and I wasn't able to race from, you know, basically September till March. So March, that Mexico race that luckily happened, was my first race back, and I was able to finish second, and that got me from 51st place ranking to 48th place ranking. So I made some prize money, I got some bonuses, and then I moved up in the ranking, which got me a little bit more paycheck. And then they increased that payment from the PTO. So it just saved me.
Do you guys make a decent living on a normal year with the podiums and the wins you've had? Do you make a decent living with sponsorship as well? And with your sponsorship, do you get cash, or is it generally product and equipment?
Yeah, I want to do better, but I'd say I'm comfortable. It's basically me and my girlfriend sometimes have the chat, and when it comes down to it, it's like, if I just went into the working force and worked on the line, I'd make less money. And I'd be doing something that I didn't enjoy. So that's a simple answer to that one. And then when it comes down to sponsorship, yeah, there's definitely bonuses involved into pretty much all my contracts. So racing and performing is probably the most important part, but then you also obviously have your base salary occasionally from your bigger sponsors. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I'm in a similar boat, honestly. I came into the sport a little later than Taylor. So there's a couple things that happened there. It took me a little longer to develop. Like earlier in my career, Taylor was just getting better results and, you know, probably making way more than me. And then I've kind of developed a little later. But I've been able to get to a point where it's similar to Taylor. Like, I'm making a living, and if I were to go do something else, I wouldn't make as much. But like, you know, probably making somewhere around like the average for a Canadian full-time, you know, employed person, maybe tiny bit more, but yeah, I mean, the thing is like being still pretty young, like both Taylor and I anticipate we'll make more. Like I'm 27. I figure I can still keep improving and getting better sponsorship. But yeah, from sponsors, it's kind of at this point, I don't really take just like a base, you know, only product sponsorship, because I'd rather just buy what I need in that case and not have to, you know, take away from what I'm providing for my other sponsors. And then, yeah, it's either a combination of some salary and bonuses, or some sponsors prefer to pay salary and some just bonuses. So this year, obviously, the bonuses weren't great because we haven't raced a lot.
Didn't help so much. But I think
we've done all right.
I think we're going to see a huge shift, to be honest, if the PTO and triathlon keeps going the direction I think it will, with more television, especially when we see the amazing job that they're going to do at Daytona. I think we'll start to see our value go up. So I'm really excited to see that. Like, I think we're in a really good position as long as we keep playing our cards right as like a sport in general. Like, I think our value will increase.
I did a podcast with Dave Scott a few weeks ago, and he was talking about how they tried to get a triathlon, you know, triathletes union way back when he was competing with Mark Allen and Mike Pig, but it was them trying to organize it. And the difference now is that you guys are, you know, this, because there are some athletes on the board, but it's got a professional management team running it as well. And they're not racing, so they don't have to focus on other stuff. They're just focusing on running the business and doing all that stuff that you've just talked about, Taylor, you know, bringing on sponsors, getting exposure for the athletes, and creating something like the PTO Hub that allows you guys to express some of your personality so people can find out a little bit more about you. And obviously that's good for sponsors. Attracting sponsors and for the sponsors to be able to refer people to you.
Yeah,
it's huge. I mean, having... we're lucky to be in the sport at this time when the PTO is here and, you know, trying to have us take off. And there's, you know, there's the best case and the worst case. The worst case scenario is they're here for a few years, it doesn't take off, and we got some big prize money races and some good paychecks, and, you know, didn't work out long term, but short term it did. And the best case scenario is it takes off, triathlon becomes more of a mainstream sport, and our profile is elevated a ton. We can make more money, we can have a better career, and, you know, have that respect from kind of the general community of, this is a real professional sport. So I think we're all hoping for the best case, but at the same time, you know, if we can just say, oh, you know, I was around and I competed in the race with the most prized purse of any race in history, that's still
it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that race. I think they've got $1,115,000 on offer, which is a huge prize money. I mean, it's way more than way more than is on offer in Kona.
Pretty much double.
Yeah, and recently they've announced that everyone is going to get a little share of that. So it's a bit like the tennis tournaments, isn't it? Where you, even if you get knocked out in the first round, you still get a check. You don't go away empty-handed, and the winners of the US Open get all of the cash. Yeah. So everybody that starts. Or is it everybody that starts or everybody that finishes? So if you were to have a mechanical or you have a crash, do you still get a handout?
Yeah. I think it is because it's top 60. Yeah. There's 60 people competing and it's top 60. So I think as long as you start and don't finish, you'll be even further back, but it doesn't really matter whether you're 50th or 60th, you're still getting.
You're obviously not allowed to pull out. Like if they make us sign something, it'll probably be in the realm of like, if you have a mechanical and cannot continue, that's too bad, like, but we'll pay you. But if you basically the gun goes and then you just go have a nap, they're probably not gonna pay you.
Right. Yeah. So it's you say 60, is that 60 total or 60 men, 60 women?
60 men,
60 women.
Right. So
120 athletes.
So that's another innovation that Sarah Gross and her colleagues have been fighting for years in Kona, is to get equal start numbers for males and females. It's not happened yet, but here we are in a PTO challenge race, and now we've got equal numbers of males and females as well. So we are having some progress, aren't we, in the sport?
Yeah. Like an equal payout too. Like there is not a single dollar difference. Like first place is the same on both sides and last place the same on both sides. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the racing. You're racing around that basically the racetrack where the Daytona 500 takes place. So that's going to be different for you.
It's sweet. Well, I've actually done it twice. So I was there when it like started. So it was pretty cool. Like the actual seed of the idea came because there was a massive storm. So Challenge Daytona was supposed to just be a normal 70.3 kind of race where you just go off into the sunset on nice roads. But we had a massive storm and essentially, I believe it was actually Starkey who went and talked to them. And it's like, listen, like we have basically an hour and a bit window. We're willing to literally race around the track like multiple laps just to get a race because we'd rather get a race than go home and just split the money equally. And Challenge Daytona luckily had the ability to actually control the track and they said yes. So that sort of started in 2018 and then 2019 they made it better and 2020 is going to be even better.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to see. I think that's part of what evolving the sport has to be is having these more spectator friendly races. Mm. And even our little race, Canadian Pro Champs, like it was the people who went and saw that race said it was the most exciting race I ever watched because you can see literally the whole event almost at all times. And that's critical. And even though it's not as exciting for us pros to, you know, do 20 laps of the same course or whatever, it doesn't really matter. All that matters is that the spectators and the commentators and everybody has a good view of what's going on. And
the good energy,
like it's so much more marketable that way. And just looking at a video where they're way off somewhere and you don't know where they are is not quite as exciting.
So I can remember way back in the 90s, there was a race in Great Britain. Mike Pigg came to do it actually, and he was way ahead of all the other guys. So it was on BBC Grandstand, which was like Wide World of Sports, you know, and prime time because I think something had happened, so there wasn't any soccer or rugby on in the afternoon. So this race was on, and it was basically the TV camera riding next to Mike Pigg. You know, that was it was the Mike Pigg. It was the Mike Pigg show for the whole day. It wasn't the most exciting bit of TV.
Yeah.
And so that was that. And then I can also remember the time when obviously they went from non-drafting, which is the purest sport, non-drafting, to the drafting format, and the drafting format obviously makes it more exciting. It was what, you know, what's become, you know, the ITU World Series. And, you know, it was obviously the precursor to the first Olympic race in Sydney. It's much more exciting. It's a different sort of racing. It suits different athletes than it used to suit for the non-drafting stuff. But it's definitely more exciting. And the races in Leeds that, you know, it's my local race and I go down, they close the whole city off and the weather's usually quite good in the middle of June and there'll be 100,000 people out watching on the streets. And I would guarantee that at least 75% of them have no idea what triathlon is, but they've turned up to watch these events because they know who the Brownlees are and they go to watch and they come away talking. You listen to people who would have no conversation about triathlon going home on the train saying how much they enjoyed it, which is brilliant. And that's the sort of exposure the sport needs to make your careers a bit more lucrative, eh?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like for sure. I think I believe Daytona is actually gonna bring in the NASCAR like film crew. I think they're like pulling on a lot of their like ideas. So that's gonna be really exciting. Like cameras on some of the bikes, some GPS like locators to find out speed and just like we were in quarantine after our last race and we turned on NASCAR because we were excited about like racing on the NASCAR track. And we were like, oh my goodness, like they actually know how to, like, we've never watched NASCAR before. And we were actually really excited because they did a good job at it. Like,
yeah,
it was awesome.
Well, I know the PTO have been looking at other sports and how they, you know, promote the athletes, promote the sport, make it a bit more interesting, some of the innovative things that they do. So hopefully they're going to be able to use some of those to make it more exciting for you guys and the spectators. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. Well, how do you think the race is going to play out then?
Like, to be honest, there's so many people on the start list that I haven't even like dug into like the real depths of like who's even there. I know every single person on that start list is good. So in reality, like, there's going to be some super fast swimmers like that we've never raced, like Henry Schumann, Vincent Louis, that I'm assuming are going to get caught on the bike by some of the super bikers. And then, like, it's, I don't even know who to call for the win. I just want to be up there part of the race. That's the main thing I'm concerned about. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. And also I think something that, is really critical to know, which nobody really knows yet, is what the exact draft distance and draft, you know, stagger potentially rules are going to be, because there's been speculation that it was going to be a 20 meter draft zone. But now that there's 60 of each, I just don't see how there'd be space for a 20 meter draft zone on a, I mean, the track's like 4K long or something. So you're going to get lapping. You're just going to have big groups coming out of the water. I don't know how they would be able to get a 20 meter zone. So if it's 10 meters, then all of a sudden you get kind of that pack effect that you see at 70.3 worlds and whatnot.
Yeah.
And that changes it a lot, because then the swim becomes that much more important. Mm-hmm. So you would have to, you know, probably pick one of the fast swimmers who's going to be able to pull it off. Whereas if it is a 20 meter zone, then you could see like a Keenley or Lionel or Starkey or Sam Long or one of those guys pull it off. So it's interesting, but yeah, you're definitely going to have that front swim group of the very, very good swimmers, the ITU swimmers, Brownlees and probably Louis and Schumann and a few of the other guys, and like some of the really good Australian swimmers as well. Mm-hmm. They'll be in there, and then you're going to have the next pack of like what's typically the front pack of a normal 70.3 race.
Yeah.
And that pack is probably going to be big, where we're going to hope to be. That's my goal. And that'll be like 20 guys probably. And then there'll be another pack of 15 or 20, and then you'll have stragglers. So the winner's probably going to come from one of those front two packs, I'm guessing. But when Lionel's in the race and Keenley and whatnot, you never know.
Well, and now Lionel's the Canadian hour record holder. He's been putting out some power on that bike.
He can do it. There's no question. He has the ability, and it's only going to be like an hour and 40 ride or something. So he'll be in good shape for that. No question.
I had Lionel's coach on last week, and we were talking about the hour record, and he said while he was training for it, he was basically just, he did one or two sessions on the track, got used to the bike, but he was still running. He set a 5K PB recently as well, hasn't he? So he's not been idle with his swim or his run training.
No. Yeah. I mean, I know he didn't swim much this summer. I don't think he had a lot of access to open water, and I think he took a lot of time off, but you can actually get it back faster than you think. But the thing is for him is if he's just getting back to his normal swim, you know, that's not that close, but it might be close enough. So it'll be interesting to see what he's able to pull off these next few weeks in his swim training to get back to where he needs to be.
It's only 1900 meters. It's not like it's
it's
2000.
Yeah. 2000. Okay. An extra 100 meters then. So it's not like a 3.8K where he's, and it be a wetsuit as well, will it?
I think so. Yes.
Yeah.
At least the last 2 years it has been. Yeah.
So, and it's two separate races we've got. We're not getting everybody set off together. Is that right?
I believe so. I think the women go at 7 a.m. and then the men go at 10. So essentially we'll have complete clear tracks. Yeah.
One of the innovations they had at the Helvellyn race was to try to work out exactly what the fastest women's times have been and what the fastest men's times were predicted to be, and then have the girls set off first. So I think the men set off 27 minutes behind the women, and the prize, the prize money, the first past the post was the first person to cross the line, male or female. So I think Alistair managed, I can't remember who was leading the females, but Alistair managed to pass everybody. And be the first to cross the line, but it might not have been that way if he'd got up against somebody who's a good fell runner.
Yeah,
it's actually, that's an equalizer format. We've seen that in one of our little pro races. This long course pro race this summer was an equalizer in the female one. So
yeah,
it can be tough to know.
Yeah,
it can be tough to know what that gap is too. It takes a lot of a lot of research to kind of figure out what's fair. So.
Yeah,
it's interesting when that happens, but there's not space on the track, I don't think.
No.
We couldn't have 120 people on there. Yeah.
No. It's an interesting innovation, though, and again, something that's that would provide a little bit of excitement.
Oh, yeah. Like, it definitely adds to the layer. Even if you do where there's a bonus, like I know in the past they've done, like, basically the first male or female out of that competition gets a bonus kind of deal. That's always cool, too. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, let's Jackson, let's just talk about your podcast for a little bit then. So the Real Triathlon Show, what's going on there?
Yeah. So earlier this year, probably in about February, a friend of mine, Garrick Lowen, messaged myself and Nick Chase, and we're all in the same triathlon. We're coached by the same coach. So we kind of chat and we, you know, train together here and there. And he said, "Hey guys, let's start a podcast. Like, let's just do it." And then we were like, "All right, let's do it." So we just, you know, in March, we started our first episodes, and it's just really, trying to bring a pro perspective to podcasts. And it's a really kind of laid back style, so similar to this, you know, not super structured, and it's a nice conversation. And we try to focus a lot on the pro side of the sport. But we also do bring on, you know, CEOs and race organizers and, you know, coaches, all kinds of different triathlon experts. But yeah, it's been really fun. Like, I mean, you obviously have been in the sport forever and you know a lot of people, but for us, it's been a way to get to know a lot of people and make connections and learn. Like, you learn a lot just talking to people, and that's been so cool. But yeah, it's been awesome. And we've tried to do some, we do race recaps when there's pro races happening. So we were doing that for all like the Zwift races, and we're doing that now for like the Ironman stuff that's coming back. So yeah, just trying to get that perspective from the pros and to hype up the pro personalities. We're trying to like get all the different pros on, and we're going to keep reaching out to different athletes as we go. Cause really we all need, yeah, like you said, you're bringing us on. It's like, you want to hear the story of all the pros, not necessarily just the top ones, but we have had Lionel on a few times, just so you know.
Good for you. Well, who else have you had on, and where can listeners listen to your podcast?
Yeah. So we've had Taylor on, we've had Cody Beals. We always, you know, have quite a few of the Canadians, but we've had Paula Finley and Eric Lagerstrom. A lot of the American pros. Haven't had too, you know, we've got to kind of reach over the pond, but we have had some of the European pros, like Ronnie Schildneck. We had Lizzie Duncombe, who's like a new pro, really good at
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know Lizzie.
So yeah. But yeah, we're on all the major, you know, Apple podcasts and Podbean, and just look up the Real Triathlon podcast and you'll see us. Hopefully maybe you can throw a link up for us. We'll get that for you.
We'll do that. Okay. Awesome. Jackson, apart from the podcast, then where else can people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram, Jackson Laundry Tri. Also my website's jacksonlaundrytri.com. Those would be the main places for me. And then I have Twitter at JackLaundry93 as well.
Okay. How about you, Taylor?
Yeah, probably the easiest for Instagram and Twitter. It's at TC_Reed. And then my website's like Taylor-Reed.com. Yeah. And then I think we both have some YouTube stuff, but I don't know if there's no real like code for that. You just have to find our names.
Yeah. We're on different channels, and we're kind of starting a pro team called the Real Triathlon Squad, and that'll be what our YouTube is. For next year, we're building that off the podcast, and yeah, probably Taylor will be on that a bunch too. We just got
brought in a videographer for yesterday's workout, I guess. Basically, yeah. So yeah, we'll have some hopeful footage, new footage up soon.
All right. What about sponsors then? Anyone you want to give a big shout out to? Jackson, you go first.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all my sponsors are huge for me. And Ventum is my bike sponsor. They're awesome. Taylor and I both share Alto Wheels and First Endurance Canada. Zoka, my apparel sponsor. They're awesome. Probably going to forget half my sponsors like I always do. But Taylor, you go, and then I'll throw my last couple in there.
I got to say like a huge shout out to Squad Bikes. They've been with me for a while, and actually like the connection there was actually through dyslexia. So him and his daughters are dyslexic, so we were able to really bond and build a good relationship there. Vanilla Prepaid has been a huge part of my team this year. They basically do prepaid credit cards, so makes making buying stuff really easy. Great Christmas gift, you could say. Nice. And then my club C3, who also Barry runs, has been around forever. I've basically been with them for 15 years, and they've supported me through my ups and downs. And then I've got like Connecticut Water. We're both with VeloFix. He's been amazing. He actually sponsored our event too, so I can't say enough to them. And then, yeah, I got a few small ones like Tri-Ontario, our provincial body helps us, and then ISM seats and Alto's pretty cool.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so the two I forgot, which I should never have forgotten, was Body Health, Natural Supplements, and Rudy Project for helmets and eyewear. So, yeah, honestly, all these sponsors, like, we couldn't do this stuff without it. So thanks for asking. 100%. Like, it's, yeah. Obviously, you know that.
No wetsuits. She didn't mention wetsuits either of you, I don't think.
Oh, Blue 70. Oh, my God. How could I forget Blue 70? I'm going to have a word with my my website editor.
You're going to have a word with your manager.
Well, what about you, Taylor? You didn't mention a wetsuit either. Do you go Skins all the time?
Yeah, Skins. I'm working on that for 2020. So hopefully we'll see something cool coming out. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like, now is the time where, like, as much as we're focusing on training in Daytona, we've got this other hat of basically being managers and promotional people for ourselves. So it's a very interesting world when you're running and selling yourself essentially to these companies. But you learn a lot about yourself and you learn a lot about business. So that's pretty cool. I think definitely a skill that people sort of forget about as being a professional athlete, especially in the triathlon world, is we really have to market ourselves.
Yeah. It's not just about swimming, biking and running every day. You've got to set some time aside to send out those emails these days. And then you've got to do all your social media stuff to promote the people who are sponsoring you and to try to show those who you'd like to sponsor you that you get some good, get some good influence out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Got to make sure you're valuable.
Indeed. Well, listen, gents, it's been great having you on the show. Thanks for coming. It's really been nice to meet you both, and I wish you both well at Challenge Daytona, and good luck finding more sponsors this winter. Hopefully, there may be a couple listening, and they'll now know what articulate gentlemen you are, and they'll reach out, and maybe they'll push some stuff your way. So, yeah, thanks once again.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
It's been great.
We'll put all those links on the show notes so that people can find you and go and watch some of your stuff and follow your progress in Daytona.
Perfect.
Awesome. That'd be great. Thanks so much.
Okay, listeners. Well, that was Taylor Reed and Jackson Laundry. My name's Simon Ward. As always, thank you very much for listening, and thank you to you guys again for being on the show. We will be back next week with some more awesome guests. But for now, enjoy the rest of your day.
Right then, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks again for listening. As always, I appreciate that you have plenty of choice out there in podcast land, so it does mean an awful lot to me when you come back regularly. If you enjoyed the podcast, please could you hop onto iTunes or Podbean and leave a rating and a comment if you can. Apparently, it's really good for the ratings, although to be absolutely honest with you, I have no idea how they work these things out. If you like the way I roll and you find some synergy with my approach to life and sport, maybe be interested in joining my SWAT Inner Circle training group. If you are, please just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com for more details. You can also use that email address to ask for my special free gift, which I have for you, which are my top 25 tips on how to be a high performance human. Okay, that's all for this week. I'll be back next week with another great guest. So for now, enjoy the rest of your week.